Christopher Holmes. We're having many and various angles of conversation here. I'd like to bring it down to a practical level that when we live in the physical body, that we often have the tendency to get caught up on the physical plane. You've obviously studied some ways and experienced ways yourself of raising our consciousness while we're in our physical bodies. You mentioned breathing, awareness of breathing and the heart, and perhaps we can also go into the whole concept of consciousness.
I emphasize working with the breath a lot. The soul has always been connected to the breath in mystical and spiritual literature. Even in the book of Genesis, God breathes into man a living soul. The soul life is connected to the breath. When children are young, they have natural patterns of breathing, and they breathe very low into their body, and they'll actually breathe from their pelvis in deep sleep. Their breathing is so low. As children grow up, as they suffer different hurts and such, they learn to hold their feelings in by holding their breath. Now imagine I'm a little boy and I'm hurt and I'm crying and upset, and I heave in my stomach as I'm crying, and then my father tells me to shut up or he'll give me something to cry about. So I suck up my breath and I hold it in, and I hold it. So you can imagine little children going up in abusive situations and being hurt a lot. They learn over time not to breathe, and they chronically hold their breath, and then you become contracted under the diaphragm. So you only breathe in the upper part of the body, and your breath isn't full, healthy breathing through your body. I encourage people to work with their breath in a natural way in their lives. Like, you don't have to sit down and do breathing exercises. You can work with your breath anywhere, anytime, beginning just by being aware of it. Most people need to emphasize exhaling, like letting down, like, and exhale completely. And then your deeper breathing comes naturally if you exhale. When I worked in prisons, I'd have groups of 30 men in anger management, and I'd say to people, take a deep breath. And every guy would kind of puff up their chest and their shoulders rise. And in a way, that's a whole wrong idea. What you want to do is you want to let down and then breathe from your abdomen, so your stomach expands as you breathe in. So learning to lower your breathing into your body and to breathe more deeply. You don't have to sit down on a chair to do that. You can do that anywhere, anytime. Work with your breathing. Buddhist monks try to go a whole day being aware of every breath. If you can go a few minutes being aware of your breath as you do things, you'll feel high just from self-awareness. And then if you're deepening your breath at the same time. Whenever people are anxious or angry and hold feelings in, they hold their breath. And people hold enough things in, and you're going to get depressed because your soul life's not going to have support anymore. If you're in pain or you feel depression, begin with your breathing. Breathing more deeply and learning to breathe as you go about your life, and it'll help reduce your stress. More than anything else, I recommend this. And it's fun. You get doing it. It's fun. It's trippy to do it. Okay, so that is one aspect, working with the breath. Then I teach a practice called self-remembering, and it's based on the Gurdjieff teaching, and this has been my main practice for 30 years. In self-remembering, the idea is people in life are not properly conscious, and so in a way we have to wake up. So what I do as I go about my day, when I remember to do it, I try to self-remember, and what that means is I usually begin by exhaling and deepening my breath and simply trying to be present here now, being aware of what's been going on in me and what's going on around me. So in moments of self-remembering, it's like you bring your attention back to being here now. Now, most times people are never here now. Because you got all these things on your mind that you got to do, or what so-and-so said to who, and what they said about you, and what you're going to do, and what you're going to show them, or what's about this, or what happened in the past, and what people don't, whatever and ever. All these things, the yogis call it the monkeys of the mind. And most people are dominated by this mental chatter and associative thinking that goes on in the mind all the time. So you walk down the street, and when you walk down the street, you're not aware of things around you. You're just thinking about all the things you got to do as you walk down the street. And you do the dishes. You're thinking about what you got to do afterwards or what so-and-so said to you. And it drives everyone crazy. But it's true. So what we want to learn to do is every now and then have a moment where you exhale and take a couple deep breaths and just bring your attention back to doing what you're doing. I remember a story, a philosopher said to the Buddha, "I hear Buddhism is a method of enlightenment. What is it you do every day?" And the Buddha says, "We walk, we eat, we wash ourselves, we sit down." And the philosopher says, "Well, everyone walks, eats, washes himself, and sits down." And the Buddha says, "Sir, there is a difference. When we walk, we're aware of the fact that we're walking. When we eat, we're aware of the fact that we're eating. Other people walk, eat, wash themselves, and sit down, and they're not aware of what they're doing." Self-remembering is this process of trying to be more mindful in your life and to every now and then, like, wake up. You know, say to yourself, "Wake up." I tap myself on my heart. You know, "Wake up. Ah, take a breath." We want to become more alive. It's like we live in this deadened, conditioned state. And we got to get back to this natural blissfulness that's inherent to us, to wake up, to become more conscious. Keep remembering that, to wake up. So go about your life making an effort to wake up.
So you tap the heart to wake up. So there's the heart connection. What is the link between the heart and consciousness?
This is such a complex subject, and there's so much to it, and different ways we need to understand this. In mystical teachings, like, we might take the prophet, Gibran, and the people say to Gibran, "Talk to us of self-knowledge." And he says, "Your hearts know in silence the secrets of the days and nights. Your minds long for the knowledge of your heart." So the mind can't understand all the mysteries of the heart. The Sufi Rumi, he goes searching for God, and he goes to the temples and the pagodas, and he's not here and he's not there. He's not in Mecca. He's not in Jerusalem. He's searching everywhere for God. "Finally, I found him in his only place within mine own heart." So we can't seek God outside of ourselves. We have to seek God within ourselves as the source out of which our consciousness emerges. There's a whole science to the heart. You take the human heart. In science, they think it's simply a soft muscle tissue. But really, there's an amazing enigma about the heart, the generation of how the heartbeat, which goes from the SA node, the sinoarterial node, called the pacemaker of the heart, and then the AN node and the bundle of His. These three fiber bodies all generate electrical impulses that brings life into the heart. In modern science, there's no way to explain this phenomena. The enigma of the heartbeat is a fundamental enigma in modern science. If we look at a human being as a quantum system, well, the electromagnetic volume of the heart is 5,000 times that of the brain in the head. Consider it scientifically as a quantum system. The center of the human being as a quantum system is the heart, which is massively more electrodynamically active than the brain in the head. As the mystics say, the life is generated through the heart. Mystics also say that consciousness circulates through the blood. See, consciousness isn't just produced by the brain in the head. But if I use different parts of my brain, that's where the blood will flow. If I do arithmetic problems, the blood will flow to my parietal lobe. That's a part of the brain used for arithmetic. If I'm doing visual tasks, the blood will flow to the occipital lobe. Wherever your consciousness is, that's where the blood flows. If I eat a big meal, it feels like my consciousness is in my stomach. And I would say, indeed, your consciousness is in your stomach because there's more blood flow. It's like what you feel it to be. Like, it feels like your consciousness is in your gut, and it is in your gut. Another example I use to illustrate this is I get people to put their hands together, and usually their hands are about the same size. And then I get a person to put their attention fully into one of their hands, and then to put their hands together. And when I do that, and when some people do that, your one hand actually grows about a quarter inch relative to the other hand. And that results simply from you putting your consciousness in your hand. So it's like you enlarge your hand by bringing your consciousness into it. So there's no way of explaining this in head ideas about what consciousness is. But there's a lot of dynamics. If I sit down and read a book for hours, when I go to bed, my partner will say, your feet are cold, because all the consciousness has been in my head and my feet get cold. You see, according to what you're doing, then it changes the blood flow in your body. And, you know, sometimes our consciousness is in our head, sometimes it's in our stomach, sometimes it's in sex organs, you know. Consciousness in us varies according to the flow of blood within us. So this is a very different concept of what consciousness is and how it might be distributed. You can be conscious throughout the whole of your body. People can experience it directly. And people do feel things in their heart. Have a heart attack, and you know, that's how you feel that in your heart. You know, your heart is not represented on your sensory motor strip in the brain. You can feel your heart directly. It's self-evident in human experience. You can feel yourself in your solar plexus, just above your stomach. When you're scared or anxious, you feel it in your solar plexus. Well, I say consciousness can exist in your solar plexus. The more we look at it, the whole scientific idea that all of human consciousness is up in the head, it's completely ridiculous, and it's self-evident that that's not true if you study consciousness within yourself. Unfortunately, the scientists don't want to study consciousness within themselves. They only want to study animal brains or other people. But you have to study consciousness by understanding it within yourself, and being aware of how consciousness can be distributed through your body. At the heart of being, I believe, there is a certain form of nothingness or emptiness at the heart of being. And all people, in a way, we need to learn to live in the nothingness. Everyone wants to be a thing, and no one wants to be no thing. Consciousness is like a form of nothingness. So the more you can feel your nothingness, then you're free of all the things. And you can attain this inner freedom and be in the world and not of it if you're not attached to everything and then driven so crazy by the stresses and monkeys of the mind and hurt feelings and troubled relationships. You know, life could be so rich if we could learn to live more in the bliss of the heart and to be more awake in our lives. In terms of living my life, I have less and less of anything, but I'm happier and happier. I believe I have a wonderful abundance in my life, of not in terms of material success, but in terms of loving relationships and involved with people and caring for people and have what I feel is meaningful work and enjoy many things in my day. So I have a very rich and abundant life and have very few negative emotions along the line most people have a lot of in terms of feeling stressed out and angry and irritated and all these things. In a way, I live quite freely inwardly. And so I'm very happy in my life. I have a very rich life. I feel, this is life in the pleroma. You know, all this abundance. The word pleroma, it's a mystical term. They talk about the divine pleroma. And in modern physics, they use it to describe the quantum vacuum. The vacuum is not empty, it's the pleroma, meaning within the pleroma are all possible particles in all possible states. The pleroma is the fullness of all possibilities. Like in the What the Bleep movie, and they were trying to show the basketballs bouncing and how you could have all the basketballs all at different levels and all are possibilities. So in the pleroma, there are all these infinite possibilities. Life in the pleroma is full of possibilities. And we help to manifest some of these. Yeah, so that's the idea of the pleroma. So it's an ancient mystical term which now has emerged in modern physics in descriptions of the quantum vacuum.
That could explain why people feel limited if they're not exploring the pleroma and they're not fully breathing, because holding your breath and feeling stressed and thinking that that's the way through your challenges would really keep a limited view on the possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Not breathing, like that's where in a way it begins. And I see so much unhappiness around me for so many people, and the stress in their lives and conflicts they have in relationships and worries, all the hurts and all these things. There's so much unhappiness in the world around us. I believe if we become awakened, then our consciousness can abide in what's called the bliss sheath. And the bliss sheath is about the size of a small grape associated with your heart. If your consciousness abides in the bliss sheath, you feel filled with bliss or joyousness simply of being. Look at the baby in its natural state. In a way, the baby is in that state. You just see the glee and bliss of a child's face, eh? It just radiates from them. Babies are so beautiful like that. They're so pure still. As the years pass and the conditioning affects it, the baby loses that inner blissful awareness of being. Okay, and then you become conditioned and you lose yourself in life. And then what we've got to do is we've got to, you know, he not busy being born is busy dying, as Bob Dylan once said. You know, it's like we got to wake up again. We need, Gurdjieff calls it a second education, to get back to our essence. As Christ says, become again as little children. Doesn't mean become juvenile. It means get back to living in our essence, living in touch with what is real in ourselves. And then life is wondrous. Becoming more conscious and breathing, that's just going to enhance our work no matter what it is. And it doesn't take time. It gives you time once you begin to do it. Because after a while, you begin to wake up. A lot of the things you used to put time into, you won't be interested in them anymore. So certain things will fall away. You don't have time. You leave behind childish things sometimes. You'll have more energy and more focus.
Yeah, and through that, you're developing compassion and depth in yourself, which allows for more compassion and awareness of other people and what you're all in together on the planet. Like you said before about the breathing being able to happen anywhere, you don't have to sit down and take time out to breathe. You're breathing all the time anyway. So whatever you're doing, it's just to come back to that, to have awareness to your breath, whatever you're doing, then it brings you more into the present, which makes you more aware of your choices and what you're doing right now and what you want to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. The less conditioned we are, the more productive we'll be in whatever venture we're involved in.